may be right to be listening to The Morning Edge this morning. And we have on the line Mitch Perry, and we have, of course, Augie. Augie, welcome to The Morning Edge.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. Good morning, Floyd, and good morning, Mitch. Well, we have a split up possibly in this Manatee-Sarasota area, and Manatee may come out the big winner. Good morning, Mitch.
Hey, good morning, Augie.
What's up? What's up with you? And what are you? What are your? What's your agenda as to what's really going to happen? Is Judge Lewis and his decision and the approvals of some and the hatred of others? Where's that going to fall, Mitch?
I'm pretty sure it's going to be a done deal. Of course, the Florida Supreme Court has to sign off on it, but there doesn't seem to be any indication that they're going to do that. And we're going to finally have, I mean, there's still going to be litigation involved with this, right? I mean, You've got among the losers in this is Corrine Brown and her very gerrymandered district up there in North Florida. She, of course, is a black congresswoman, and she basically, her district is going to be torn very, changed very dramatically and may make it very unfavorable for her. And she's been talking about since she's been aligned with the Republicans, against the Fair District Amendments because it was going to hurt her individually. So, the other big, loser, of course, Daniel Webster, who, pretty, relatively, not necessarily a household name even amongst Florida politics, but of course, he's been, prospered by the House Freedom Caucus in Washington as a possible successor to Paul Ryan in the House, Speaker of the House sweepstakes.
He'll be a winner in a short run.
Right. Maybe an interim candidate, who knows.
Right.
But the fact is that I think the fact that he is very likely not going to be in Congress in a year from now, at least not in his current seat, is a turnoff already for people who, see him as not having, frankly, a long future. There's discussions about him maybe running in another Republican seat. It's all scrambled, Augie. It's really going to be interesting to see how long-time incumbents, what they decide to do. I mean, in the case of Webster, his district is going to go so pro-Democrat, it's going to be unwinnable for him. But I'm reading there's talk about him running in nearby John Micah's district, Republican, and that Micah may run in Ron DeSantis's district. That's an open seat now because Ron DeSantis in the Jacksonville area, he, of course, is running for U.S. Senate. So it definitely opens up all these different doors. It's going to be very, fun to watch. And bottom line is, Democrats are going to gain probably 2 to 3 seats on this, I think, overall.
Yeah, there's some maximum of 6 or 7 at the outside. But, it's a small number of people. The Buchanan situation, he's trying to play it cool, like it doesn't really matter.
Well, tell me, see, I'm not so familiar with what's going on down there with your district there. So what's going to happen?
Well, the split is a little bit unclear the way the newspaper had a big write-up on it, and I'm trying to figure out. They show a map here. And Manatee District 16 goes up into Hillsborough, and 17 goes down from a line in Sarasota, which is somewhere near the downtown. But this is a really poor. It's a yellow and green and blue for the water area. District 13 evidently is underwater because it's blue as well. in any case, you have this yellow area of Manatee County, rather large, and Manatee County has had a marginally good Democratic county and growing with Democrats. It's got 7 districts within it currently, and 5 of them are there. You vote in the district only. The at large, there's 2 at large, which tends to swing in favor of all the developers. In Sarasota County, all 5 districts, the developers and landholders own those county commissioners. So it takes voting to swing it in Manatee County for the developers, where in Sarasota it just takes money. in any case, but as to where it lines up, it looks like somewhere around Fruitville or a little above that, maybe the Newtown area of Sarasota is now going to be Sarasota on south, and that would be Englewood. And part of DeSoto County, Rooney is a guy that's got part of District 17 now, and that's the change there. The local Democrats in Sarasota County have been pretty ineffective. They have a new leadership, but it looks like the same old business because very few people run the party, and the membership is starting to leave in large numbers. That is, the precinct committee people are resigning, and one after the other, even though Christine Jennings has taken over.
Right.
So,
right. It is interesting, right? I mean, you go back years when that was an open seat after Catherine Harris left, and, you know, the Democrats came close, right, a few times. Mm-hmm. And before, when Christine Jennings, I guess, ran against Vern Buchanan back in, what was it, 2006, I think it was?
Well, there's a story that's out there that's been floating around that I've heard about. I don't know if Floyd's heard about it or not. But McCarthy, the guy that's in trouble, is the, what is he, in the Senate?
He's the House Majority.
House Majority, leader, yeah.
Yeah.
He supposedly is the one that cut a deal that when Jennings was challenging Buchanan's seat, that the Republicans, through McCarthy, said we'll throw her over and do some other replacement. I've not been able to figure out what the deal might have been, but McCarthy was in on it.
And, well, what do you mean, though? I don't understand what you're talking
well,
about.
Well, she lost by 300 or 400 votes, whatever
right,
it was.
Right, she was challenging it, right.
After 18,000 votes
exactly.
disappeared.
Right.
There's a whole bunch of questions, much like the 2000 election with Bush-Gore.
Right. Sure.
And it was just reminiscent of that so much. And people felt very sorry. She was an effective candidate, all of the above. So she basically, people felt that she got screwed, frankly.
Right.
And the screwing was with the cooperation of the DCCC, some people are saying, even though she had attorneys and everything else. Everybody was in on the money side of solving the problem and the idea of not really solving it, but making a deal with the Republicans. So the dinos in Sarasota are all over the place. They just they keep doing their little deals, and I'm very cynical about the future until the I-4 corridor spills and splashes south from Manatee down into Sarasota. It's starting to show signs of that, and the Hispanics are going to, I think, eventually flex their muscle, but they'll have to show up in the parties.
Exactly.
And it's going to the other matter that people are wondering about, is there any point in these elections in this area? And it's because of this cynicism. And when this comes into play, what happens in Manatee County, Floyd, you know who's the current chair of the Democrats up in Manatee?
Actually, I don't know.
I
don't
really know.
Okay. Know.
I don't either. I'm not from Manatee. I'm from Sarasota. I know quite a bit about that. I do know a little bit, and I think there's one guy by the name of Smith on the county commission who's a Democrat, a black man.
Yeah,
and in any event, the what happens here now will be will start to change things. Arsenault came to the Democratic Party in Sarasota last month, who was from Louisiana, who's now running it from Tallahassee, the party through the state.
Right.
And he's pretty cynical, and he used the F word, and you effing people down here, you're just grayheads. You're not going to go anywhere. He just told it to their face. It was in the most amazing talk I've ever seen.
Wait, no, what he said? What in terms of what you got to get off their rear ends and get more involved with the party? Or
well, what? You're grayheads. You don't do anything. We don't expect anything from you. It was even worse than that.
Wow.
That was a hopeless slam at everybody. The former chair, Ferrandino, brought him there, and she had to be going home looking at a mirror and say, was my mascara wrong, or what was wrong with me? But
wow.
Something was wrong there. Yeah, the other thing about the concealed carry thing that's just causing some ruckus on the guns, and people
right.
are all excited about the guns down here. I think the split in the two counties is going to, I think, cause Manatee County Democrats. And Susie Copeland, who's the head of the NAACP here, has been on the show a few times. I need to get the head of the party on. Mitch Mallett, who's the state committeeman, was a co-host for a short while. And I need to get their ideas of what they think is happening with the party up here. I think they're with the possibility of Port Manatee becoming an entry point into the United States from Cuba, and the closest one to port to Cuba from the standpoint of distance, which would change a lot of things for this county that has been somewhat industrial, hiring people, somewhat on the moderate to liberal side, blue collar, they call it Bradenton here, Bradenton being the heart and the soul of this area. And there's that potential, and as I said, they are the lead-in point, or the receptacle of the I-4 corridor. But so statewide, what do you feel right now? You guys, and are you still doing midpoint at on M&F, Mitch?
Yeah, I do have a weekly radio show on WMNF at 12 noon Thursdays. Yeah, 12 to 1 p.m.
And we're speaking to Mitch Perry, reporter at FloridaPolitics.com. FloridaPolitics.com. And if you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 941-745-1490.
Yeah. Midpoint had a recording the other day. Maybe it's because of the fundraising they're doing this week. That's surprised me at the midpoint time. Is that, I mean, it's, you guys have five different hosts.
Right.
Yeah. What else are you doing?
Well, I'll be going to Tallahassee this week, tomorrow night. Wednesday is what they have, the AP, I forget what they call it, basically like the governor and the speaker of the House and Senate president and all the candidates running for Senate are all going to be marched before reporters for an all-day event. It's kind of a preview for the legislative session, which of course is beginning early next year, right, in January, just in a few months away. So, I'm looking forward to that, and, you know, we'll get a chance to talk to all the Senate candidates. I've covered one of their debates already, Republican Senate candidates, and I've been writing a lot about the Democratic race between Grayson Murphy and also Pam Keith, who's another candidate there. So I think the Senate race is really super interesting, right?
Yeah, Rubio's getting himself in. I mean, he's getting such mockery coming out of Trump's mouth lately. It's I mean, it's almost stand-up comedy. Sweating, water-drinking senator.
Well, yeah, you're talking about the presidential stuff. Yeah,
yeah,
I mean, that's.
But I mean,
and by the way, you got the Democrats tomorrow night. I'm sure you're excited
night.
About that, Augie. Huh?
Well, yeah, it's going to be interesting. Biden is souring the milk for Hillary a little bit, except that now that the committee, the Benghazi committee,
right,
is starting to look defrauded, and Gowdy is the guy that's in charge of it, is starting to look less reputable, and now this investigator said that he was told a lie,
right,
and all of that. All of this is going to smear over the whole server thing and the email thing for
Hillary. Well, it'll be interesting. She goes before the Benghazi committee next week, right, October 22nd.
Yep.
That's
going to
be big time. Everybody's going to be watching that to see how that plays out. But I will say, going to, speaking of the Democratic presidential race, I just wrote about this morning, two new polls out from CNN this morning on South Carolina and Nevada, which will be, I guess it's Nevada and then South Carolina, the next two states after Iowa and New Hampshire.
Right.
And Hillary Clinton is winning big in both states over Bernie Sanders. In fact, Bernie Sanders is getting, you know, South Carolina, there's a lot of black voters in the primary there, Democratic black voters. Nobody is supporting Bernie Sanders amongst the black community. He's getting like 4% support amongst black voters, according to this CNN ORC poll.
Yeah,
so
that is
Bernie's
the history.
Doing well in Iowa, New Hampshire, but the landscape, when you get down to the South, you know, after those first few states, doesn't really look great for him, at least right now, according to the polls.
I thought what was great is the last results came out for campaign contributions. Hillary had $23 million, which you expected her to have a big total. But Bernie had 24 million.
Yeah, actually it was 28 and 26. 28 million, and Bernie had 26 million.
Within,
you're right there with her. And he's getting a lot of small donations, of course.
A lot of small donations.
Yeah.
And that is impressive to have him come up well over $20 million.
No, he's doing a great job. I mean, you know, if people support him, he's doing, you know, I mean, I don't think anybody could have imagined, I don't think, you know, that he would be doing so strong, that he's really catching on the campaign trail. I think that's why this debate tomorrow is actually a big deal, right? Because it's the first time he's going to have the biggest audience for himself. I actually like Martin O'Malley a bit, the Maryland governor who's getting really no traction at all. I think he is a very, you know, has a great record, actually, and I think this is going to be great for him to get a platform. And I'm sure he'll be going hard against Hillary Clinton. He has to show some differences there. So it's going to be, I think, more interesting than maybe people think it's going to be, actually.
Yeah, the problem that he presents is he's from Baltimore. He's former mayor of.
Yeah.
And the black community is very upset with these latest killings and so forth by the police. And then this latest decision in Cleveland, where the kid that was, the cops rushed up to him and shot him almost immediately. Now they ruled the grand jury jury came out to not indict. And the same thing is going on in Baltimore. So O'Malley, he's got that as an albatross because while he did a lot of good, some people say, in terms of police-community relations, the result was they're not very good after all. And
well, right, Augie. What happened was, you know, you're right. Baltimore blew up earlier this year. We all know Freddie Gray's situation. They had that one night of civic unrest, and people came back and looked at Martin O'Malley, who was considered a very successful mayor for the most part, but he was back in the 90s when he was mayor there, and in the early aughts when crime, being tough on crime, was even popular amongst Democratic circles, right? So he was doing a lot of that, and now, right, come back to 2015, it kind of redounds on him, and it really, because people didn't really know him at all nationally, and then they saw that amongst, you know, blacks in his home city were very critical of what he did there. It really was a terrible timing for him and his candidacy, and he's really had a hard time picking up from them. But overall, he's an incredibly qualified candidate who has a very, very progressive record. If you look at his record of governor at Maryland for 8 years. And I think that, you know, I think that I'm very curious again how he's going to play out tomorrow night. And you know, when you're speaking about guns, of course, this is one of the issues where Bernie Sanders is very vulnerable,
yeah,
right? Because of his record in Vermont. And I think that O'Malley's going to be taking shots at both Clinton and I think Sanders because he needs, you know, Sanders is ahead of him on these polls. Mm-hmm. And I think the gun issue is something you're going to hear. You know, but Bernie's going to get hit a lot about on that tomorrow. Pardon the pun there.
Yeah. Well, the whole matter of guns, in the case of Sanders, he has argued for the elimination of multi-shot guns, that is the AR, what's the one?
AK-47.
AK-47 and things like that. I mean, years ago, I don't know why the gun control people don't raise the issue of the machine gun. Why? They've been banned for a long time because the FBI pushed and they got that banned, and that's a multi-firing weapon, big time, and the AK-47 has been notoriously a killer. And, you know, and in these multi-shot pistols and so forth, even 22s with hollow-nose bullets, if you've ever fired one, you know what a little 22 bullet can do if it's got a hollow nose in it. It'll split anything apart. I was a hunter in my time, a pretty good shot. In fact, I was expert in the Army. And I did, you know, bullseyes at 500 feet and so forth. So I know something about it, but the weaponry has got to be handled, and the Germans have an interesting set of systems. Any gun you have in Germany has to be certified. You have to show that you can fire it properly over a one-year period. Each and every gun has to be certified with a field test, and you have to show you can pass the field test on each gun, not one gun or all guns, one gun. So if you have 90 guns, you got to go through this thing for 90 years, I suppose, but it's the joke's on us. I mean, we've got to start regulating how we have weaponry in the general populace. But
Mitch, one of the things we see is they now want to put guns in the parking lots, the football games on Florida State and FSU,
yeah,
and it's just amazing.
Yeah. And in the colleges.
And open carry, right? That's
open
the new
carry,
thing you
yeah.
mentioned earlier, Augie. That's the big
sure.
legislation that was introduced last week. Mm-hmm. That's going to be very much debated in Tallahassee in January. And I don't think it's popular with the public, and I think it's going to have a hard time. They have the guns on campus bill. I covered that last year, the session. That did not get passed, right? There was
mm-hmm.
there was definitely opposition. But you know, these I don't know. This is the gunshine state. I mean, Tallahassee Republicans
yeah.
can't get enough laws, you know, to make it easier to use a gun in Florida. I mean, it's like they try to invent ways, basically. And one of the few things that we don't have here is this open carry thing.
Mm-hmm.
We have you can have concealed gun weapons permit, but we don't have the open carry. And a lot of sheriffs don't like this, by the way. So law enforcement is not supportive of this.
What do you do when somebody's shooting it up somewhere and another guy's got a gun and he's got to think about, should I pull my gun or not? Are the police going to arrive, and are they going to shoot me by mistake because I'm trying to defend other people? I mean, that's often going to be a problematic situation. This thing is the Wild West all over. The marshals notoriously years ago, and I cited this before on the show, they would, in the small towns, they went roving from town to town and checking out the gun situation, and they appointed people to gather the guns in the local bar in a lockable barrel or something, and you brought your gun to town and it stayed in a barrel until you left. And if you were going to go and leave for a trip and you were a local civilian, you could go because they knew you, but anyone else, anybody new to the community, had to turn their guns in. So there was gun control in the good old days, and you know, we can call for it now. There should be argument, but I don't know. The whole thing is a little nuts. But it's going to be interesting. We're going to see Hillary call before Benghazi committee, and the subject has got to come up tomorrow night, and what she's going to do about that. And as far as Bernie goes, the thing that's interesting about Bernie, he's gaining the kinds of numbers of young people in his corner, and the turnout is huge. But the CNN thing tomorrow night is going to be about turnout too, because it's going to be compared to the Fox turnout with Trump. And that subject came up on Sunday in discussion. Will there be a turnout of viewers, anything approaching the 20-some million that, right, that Fox had for the Trump debate?
I mean, I would think not, obviously. But, you know, the bottom line is this. The Democrats, there's been a big outrage that there have been no debates until the one tomorrow night. You know, at this time, I wrote about this morning, at this time in 2007, the last time you had a competitive Democratic presidential race, you had 13 debates. 13 debates at this point in October of 2007. You've had zero so far. This has been a big criticism of Democratic National Committee Chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Debbie Downer.
She's got it set up for Hillary Clinton not to be challenged. Martin O'Malley's made a big issue out of it. And I don't know if you saw this story this morning. Tulsi Gabbard, who's the congresswoman from Hawaii,
right,
an up-and-coming star of the Democratic National Committee.
Is she calling for...
She's been calling for more debates, and basically she was uninvited to the debate tomorrow night in Vegas by Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I mean, what kind of party is this?
Disinvited?
Disinvited, exactly. She asked for a ticket with her and somebody else because it was the closest debate to her, you know, home state of Hawaii.
Mm.
And basically, to the New York Times this morning, where she was denied because she's been making, quote-unquote, too much of a distraction about these debates.
Well, Wasserman Schultz is starting to look like a little martinet. And,
there's a lot of criticism about it. There has been for a long time, let's be honest. There's nothing new in the sun here. But this lack of debate thing has gotten pretty big, you know what I mean? And right, the Democrats will get, the Donald Trump factor has brought in a lot of viewers, but they see these big debates on Republicans are hosting, and they're like, what are we doing over here? You know, we're doing nothing. And compared, again, to 4-8 years ago, when they had 13 debates, they had over 20 overall. They look at six schedule for this year, or this whole season.
Now they've got a new thing that they call, it's not a debate thing, but you can have these other events, and then they take turns saying something, and then they, one after the other, like little ducks coming on stage by themselves with no mm-hmm. contradictions.
Yeah, but those aren't obviously debates. The thing is that the important distinction is actually the Debbie Wasserman Schultz will say to you that actually 8 years ago we only had six or seven debates scheduled officially, and that's true because what happened was all these different networks or different organizations like the Congressional Black Caucus said we want to host a debate, and all the candidates went. The difference is the DNC is now saying we will penalize you, we will not invite you to our next debate if you go participate in one of these extraneous debates not officially regulated by the party.
You know, on something like that, it's like the thing that's like 28 pages are classified over the 9/11 report that the families of the dead people from 9/11 want revealed. When is somebody going to be bold enough to say to in the Schultz issue, why don't you step down if you're going to interfere with debates? Just go away and get somebody who knows and cares something more about democracy than this. And,
right.
And same thing with Graham's wanting these 28 pages. Report what you read. Say exactly what you read, what you know, and let somebody go to jail. Let the government jail you, or let the party punish you for violating these ridiculous rules. I mean, this thing, it gets to be sillier and sillier. What are your
is Snowden when we need him?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And so, but anyway, so but it seems like every little party with that falls under the spell of Debbie Wasserman starts to act just like her, because that's, I think, what's happening in the local parties. But anyway, so what is your big concerns? What do you think is coming, if you're going to predict anything that is coming of any real import? If the debates go problematic and Bernie says, well, I've got 20 million people averaging $3, whatever, and this is my total monies, what do you have? And there's this challenge on stage. I mean, what kind of challenges do you think are going to come on stage? What's O'Malley going to do? What is Jim Webb going to be there?
Yeah, well, Jim Webb, good point. Jim Webb is going to be there. And, of course, he's been totally, along with Lincoln Chafee's also going to be there, the former Rhode Island governor, senator, former Republican, former independent. These two have been, you know, if Martin O'Malley's been kind of a disappointment, not getting any traction, I mean, what do we say about Webb and Lincoln Chafee? They've
and
been
Webb
invisible.
Is really strong. Webb's a very strong candidate.
Well, Webb is a very fascinating man, right? I mean, he's a guy who was a Secretary of Navy under Ronald Reagan. He's a novelist. He's a really an original thinker. He's a conservative Democrat. He talks a lot about defending basically the whites of the South. You know, he's got this certain take on things, but he's a fascinating guy, and I look forward to him being on there. I think that a few people, well, I don't know what's going to come out of his mouth, certainly, in terms of some of these issues, but I think that it will just be interesting to see him there, because again, you'll get to hear different points. Look, when we watch these Republican debates, which everybody's watched, they've been all entertaining and all that, but they've also been so one-sided, right? I mean, if you thought otherwise, I mean, if you just watch cable news, and if you just watch these Republican debates, you would think Planned Parenthood was like the next thing since Nazi Germany in terms of like being the worst organization ever. And I think you're going to hear a very different point of view tomorrow night about Planned Parenthood, because the bottom line is, as we've seen in polls, and Republicans are shocked about this, is that most Americans do not want to defund Planned Parenthood, right? Mm-hmm. And yet, on the Republican side, we know this is maybe going to shut down, the threat to shut down the government, well, not this time, but maybe in December, and it's a huge issue, a huge talking point, but you'll see a different perspective tomorrow night that you haven't seen so far on the political landscape, and I think that's interesting, and other issues that are of importance. I think that basically, I covered these guys, I've even covered some of them, you know, live, some of the presidential candidates this year. And Republicans focus a lot about foreign policy and defense, and they really are critical, of course, of Barack Obama, which, you know, there's some things to criticize, certainly, in terms of what's going on in the world. But the Democrats, they don't focus on that, because they don't focus on criticizing Obama, for the most part. But they talk a lot about domestic issues, right? The bread and butter, like health care. You know, Bernie Sanders, right? The Wall Street Journal had this article about him a couple weeks ago that I'm sure he's going to be asked tomorrow night. You can mark this down. They're going to say, you proposed $18 trillion in spending, because this was a Wall Street Journal article that came out a couple weeks ago that said Bernie Sanders is promising so much, this is how much it would cost. Now, by the way, I had somebody on my Midpoint show, a writer, break that down and say that's not accurate whatsoever. $15 trillion of that supposedly is because you go for the health care for all, you know, a plan. And, in fact, they were basing it on a study that's flawed that would show we would save money if we were to do that and not cost more money.
Well, it costs, up till the Affordable Care Act came in, I think it was two-thirds of the cost of health care was in where health care was costing 32 cents on the dollar, whereas Medicare was costing 4 cents on the dollar.
Right, yeah.
Now you've got this spreading of Medicare, which is what I think Bernie's doing, that is going to lower the costs for the whole thing. And if somebody decides to say healthcare has got to be not for profit, then you've got another argument that takes the hirees from the insurance companies, gives them a new job somewhere, who knows where.
Well, you know, I think actually speaking about healthcare, you're probably going to hear a lot about this tomorrow night as well, because I think even Hillary Clinton has talked about tweaking some things with Affordable Care Act, right, with the medical this Cadillac tax, I think,
right,
I've heard.
Right.
She's criticized that. I think that, you know, right, even the biggest supporters of the ACA would say it's certainly not perfect and it has a lot of things that needs to be improved. So I think that's something that we'll probably hear from tomorrow night.
I had predicted long ago that somebody's going to walk on stage, let's stop talking about a single payer. Medicare for everybody, folks. That's what we got to do, and cut down on the influence of the insurance companies, pharmaceuticals, and so on, and let's really reform health care.
Well, that's Bernie Sanders, right?
I know.
Bernie Sanders has been saying that all along the campaign trail, and he's, like I say, I can guarantee you he'll be asked this question about the $18 trillion spending. I guarantee you that, because, again, this plays in the notion that he's this crazy socialist, right, who wants to be, you talk about big government, he'd be the big government Canada uber Alice that we've ever seen.
Do we have a caller, Floyd? I don't know if Floyd hears me or not. Anyway, we can keep talking. He's got something. He seems like the phone is kind of locked around his neck. In any event, the healthcare thing is where the controversy is going to fall, because they're going to argue about does your plan do anything different than the Affordable Care Act? Is it really a simplifying of the whole thing, or what's really going to happen? And this is where the ball game starts to get interesting, where the difference is. That will be, and how do you pay for it? And are you going to take the cap off of the Social Security thing,
right,
so all dollars are taxed equally? That kind of thing.
But, yeah, you'll also, absolutely. Those are bread and butter issues for Democrats, talking about the social programs. And they will talk a lot about that. Environment, that's another thing, Augie, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have not heard, or you might have heard, like, one question asked in the two debates about climate change. Again, that's not a topic that Republicans talk about. So it makes sense, I guess, in a way, that a Republican debate, they don't even ask the question. But Democrats, they talk about it all the time. So there will be a lot, that's what I'm saying. It's going to be interesting about these 2 hours tomorrow night. You're going to look at it, it's going to be a different America in many ways. What Republicans are talking about in their debates and what they care about and what Democrats do. I mean, obviously, there's certain things that are shared. I mean, what's going on in Syria and how we're dealing with that or not dealing with that is a question, I think, that transcends
our
parties. But the point is that, you know, there's different concerns. Like I say, going back to Planned Parenthood, that is something that you're going to hear a defense of for the most part, you know, tomorrow night, where horrible it is.
It's going to be treated as an attack on women.
Exactly.
And the linkage is going to be clear. Did we have a caller?
Someone just complimented our show, enjoying listening to us. Oh. But we're going to take a break. We'll be right back on The Morning Edge.
Sarasota is home to a true gift, the Posture Clinic of Sarasota, with Dr. Mark D'Amato, 4450 South Tamiami Trail. Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor, treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet, and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients, too.
With the animals, hunt, with the animals, and
this part of The Morning Edge is brought to you by Callens, Little, and Delgado, practicing personal injury, criminal defense, and family law. Call 941-749-1446. 941-749-1446.
I may be crazy, but it just may be a lunatic you're looking for. Turn out.
And we are back. We have Mitch Perry on the phone, reporter at FloridaPolitics.com, and we're talking local politics. Welcome back.
We're not drinking anything in here, Mitch. It's just one of those things, as the song goes. Mitch, you guys at M&F are in a big fundraiser. How are you guys making out there?
You know, Augie, I think it's tough going, but I think the station will make it. You know, I'm just a volunteer now. I used to be, of course, an employee there for 9 years, but I only do the show on Thursdays, so I just get these emails, and I see that it's tough, right? I mean, it's tough to, at any time, to basically dial for dollars and ask for listeners to contribute. But the station's been doing it for 36 years, so they'll get through it again this week.
Are you you do St. Peter's blog? Is that who you write for?
Yeah, that's my other. I write for two websites actually, FloridaPolitics.com and StPetersBlog.com. St. Peter's blog is more the local Tampa Bay area reporting. Mm-hmm. Florida Politics is some statewide and national reporting. But every day I'm on both sides.
Peter Schorsch, is that who you work for?
Peter is my boss, right? Yeah. Peter runs a variety of different websites. We've got a lot of we're hiring more people than ever across the state. It's a really solid source of political news, definitely.
Well, you know, Peter's been on, and it's been a while, two or three times in the past, and I'd certainly like to make contact with him if you might mention that.
I'd absolutely do that.
If you've got my email, I think I left it on. I couldn't get you. I couldn't pull you up for some reason, get your email. But you've got mine, so maybe you can send me a note, and we can do that, make that connection
I
with
him. I bet his
Peter.
Email is at floridapolitics.com.
You just said that, I know. I'm just making noise here.
Okay.
but not many people admit that, but some people say he doesn't know it, but he is. in any event, I said what's coming. What big things are? Is there any big thing you think that's going to happen? And when the ruling happens, is there going to be a lawsuit on the redistricting?
I think so. Think so. At least one. Corrine Brown from Jacksonville, like I said, the Orlando Jacksonville area. Who she's been, like I say, she's a Democrat, right? Who's been in office for a long time, and she and her district has been so. It's a kind of a classically funny looking district, right? Because the reason it's not funny though is because the reason it's like that is because Florida was, you know, told by the courts in 1992 that you have to draw a district like that because you need to have a minority access district because, you know, Florida historically had been discriminatory in terms of, with blacks in terms of giving them representation. So Corrine Brown's seat was a basically drawn up in the kind of bizarre way that it has been to fulfill those mandates. Yeah. So she is claiming this is like, I don't know if she's saying Voting Rights Act violation, but she's saying definitely, I mean, obviously she has a self-preservation thing going on here, but I think that the principle is one that, you know, I think other people may agree with in terms of, but her district goes up against the Fair District Amendment, which is that no district should be drawn up to help any particular candidate, and it should be drawn in a contiguous and straightforward way, essentially. And her district is not, right? Her district was that. So you're going to have a lawsuit there.
But it will help tens of thousands of Florida prisoners who can't vote.
Right, yes.
Now, what's the story on that? I mean, did they make that part of the argument, that you achieve equanimity among races when you include prisoners who can't vote?
I mean, I don't think they made that argument. Now, maybe some Republican will want to make that in a countersuit, that was never discussed. That was what you're referring to is a comment made by a lawmaker who thought she was not being recorded, who made that comment about packing in prisoners could help out Corrine Brown. But going back to the point, though, because, right, what's going to happen here, the Supreme Court signs off on this, there will be lawsuits, but basically, then it's game on, right? Because, I mean, most law, I don't think it's going to change too much, right? So I think that once the Supreme Court vets this, Charlie Crist is probably going to announce officially he's running for the CD-13 seat in Pinellas County. You're going to see, Republicans. Maybe you'll see Mayor Rick Baker, the former mayor of St. Petersburg, run in the Republican district or that CD-13 seat. So you're going to see some more clarity. Gwen Graham, right, the congresswoman from up in the Tallahassee area, who is considered a rising star on the Democratic Party, she is going to be drawn out of a seat. Basically, because her seat's going to be overwhelmingly Republican. So the question is now, does she, like, pivot and maybe start thinking seriously and talking about governor in 2018?
Yeah, she is.
I've heard that talk.
And Castor is another one that's going to have to make some decisions.
No, what do you mean? She's not making any decisions. She's got her district becomes a little less Democratic-friendly, but it's still going to be very Democratic-friendly.
What I mean is she's made noise about running for higher office beyond her.
Not too much, Algy.
No.
I cover her pretty closely.
You do.
No, people put her in the mix. I agree with you there when they talk about it. But she herself
so
has
that's
really
just,
never
that's
shown
that's just noise people
that.
Are making about her, not her making her own noise.
Yeah, no. She's not at all.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I think she's, at least right now anyway, pretty content to remain, because she had that seat probably for life, you know what I mean? Like Jim Davis had that seat before her. He had it for life. It was way more Democratic then. And then he, of course, ran for governor because he had ambitions. But when you do that, you lose that empty seat, that seat. So I think Kathy Castor is going to be very careful if she's going to ever attempt to leave that seat. And I don't see her running for governor or any statewide office in 2018. But, you know, who knows? I mean, I'm not saying that it couldn't happen. I just don't. I have not. I've talked to her frequently, and I have never heard her express anything about that at all.
You know what would be interesting to do an interview with Gwen Graham because of what her father's been doing.
Sure.
Over the missing 28 pages and what's happening with the 9/11 families that are still pleading with Obama's promise that he would do that, because he did promise that, and when he was running, and
right.
That has just been shoved to the sidelines. The politics are just too powerful and the oil interests too great, and the results are the Saudis are still running the price of gas up and down at will. But anyway, any predictions, any particular predictions?
I mean, here in fall 2015, I would just say that I'm going to continue to look forward to covering this U.S. Senate race that we have next year, which is pretty wide open. I don't think there's any for sure guaranteed person you could say right now is going to be the next senator succeeding Marco Rubio in the Senate. I think that the Grayson Murphy on the Democratic side is going to be close, nip and tuck the whole way through. And the Republican side, there is no front runner right now, about 10 months before the primary. And so that's going to be kind of fun to follow.
Daniel Webster won't decide to take the House Speaker.
Well, it's not up to him to decide, Augie.
No,
I mean, they have to vote for him. I know he wants to be the House Speaker.
No, I know that. But if he gets booted out of his job, he's got to change residence or something in order to be
in. Well, again, you know, I mean, I would say that that's not a good thing in his favor, but they could still vote for him. You know, we're talking about the next 10 months, right? I mean, he's not going anywhere for the next year. He's got a seat until he runs next year. But I do think that what I read anyway is that it's a long shot for him anyway, even though he has a House Freedom Caucus supporting him. That's only about 40, 45 members. But you know what? If I could say this, you know, Paul Ryan, right, is supposed to be the guy that they're all rallying around. But you know what? It's not true because Paul, there was an email that went out over the weekend that was designed to slam Paul Ryan, and it probably has, and that is that Luis Gutierrez, who is a congressman from the Chicago area, probably the most pro-comprehensive immigration legislator in the Congress, has been quoted as saying that he would love Paul Ryan to be the House Speaker because Paul Ryan is, you know, a guy who believes in comprehensive immigration reform. Well, that is, like, the worst news you could ever tell anybody in the House Republican Conference, right? And
well,
so this has been spread around the last 2 days.
Yeah.
And I think that I've read some online conservative blogs this morning, and I think that that Paul Ryan, he still is the guy. Don't get me wrong, but I think that he may not have the. This is what you've been hearing. He may not have the 218 votes in hand, and Paul Ryan is not going to commit himself unless he knows he has it and he doesn't have to compete for it. And I think these Republicans don't know what the heck they're doing, right? They don't know who they want, but they know what they don't like. They don't like a lot of different things, and I think that Paul Ryan, you're hearing this backlash against him in some circles. So who knows? Daniel Webster, maybe he does come out of this. I don't know what's going to happen.
I tell you. Well, Grayson has always been an interesting, controversial character. So,
oh, yeah.
So the media has to enjoy him. The whole business of what happens in this most corrupt state of all, how do we get Scott free of Scott, is a real question. And the residue he leaves behind has got to be something that people are starting to think about. I mean, how long does he have yet?
Governor Scott?
Yeah. Is he out in 2 years?
Not for 3 years.
He's got 3 years to go.
Oh, yeah. We've got a long time left in the Rick Scott era here in Florida. Yeah. Now, what's interesting about Rick Scott, of course, is how much he's alienating his fellow Republicans in Tallahassee, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Medicaid thing is where I wanted to head into. So, if you want to make that connection or any other, it's fine.
Well, I mean, I don't know if there's going to be much. There probably will be a push again, but I mean, really, Augie, I don't know. The only thing you might see what you had last year in terms of Medicaid expansion, the Senate had a hybrid plan, if you remember.
I do.
I think it was Senator Aaron Bean who had the plan, and it went nowhere. Scott's totally against it. House Republicans, they're against it. It's not going anywhere. I hate to be so cynical about it, but it's just not.
Well, Gardner and Lee have been pushing for it, but
sure, the Senate's pushing for it hard. They pushed for it very hard last year, maybe because they had interest in the healthcare industry. But nevertheless, they pushed for it. and it went nowhere. I mean, the Senate's going to be for. I don't know if the Senate's going to push for. In fact, that'll be something interesting. We might learn on Wednesday, the AP day, when Andy Gardner will be before the reporters. But we'll probably ask him, "Are you going to try to push that again?" So we'll probably know.
Is there any polling on the popularity or lack of popularity of the Republicans in Florida?
You know, there has been. I mean, nothing new in terms of like how people feel about the party. I can't say I've seen something like that recently. I think that Governor Scott actually has done a little bit better in recent polling. I think he actually had a poll recently. I think it was Quinnipiac that he was over water, so to speak, where he was not. You know, his favorables were higher than his unfavorables, which is like almost never happened. Basically, other than the 2 days he was elected governor in Florida, the other times he's ever been polled, he's never been that popular. You know what I mean? It's like kind of crazy. But he's been popular against Alex Sink and popular against Charlie Crist. But his numbers were kind of edging up a little bit better, I think, the last poll I saw of him being asked. But about the party overall, look, I think people just don't like politics at all these days. They don't really, you know, I don't know in Florida if there's really paying it. They don't, of course, the problem is in Florida, people don't pay that much attention in many cases to state politics until it's some big issue, guns or marijuana or something like that.
The voting machines are, well, we're going to get the marijuana laws coming forward. There's a big push in that regard. But then,
hey, so Oregon just started, by the way. I don't know if you saw that. They're now illegal in Oregon. I mean, they passed it last year, but it only began on October 1st.
The voting, there's a push now for new voting machines down in Sarasota County, and they've got this order in, and there's a real question mark. Who's paying for what, and is Kathy Dent going to do some more damage on the next election? Because that's who's been up to her neck in questions and scandal in the past. And there's a push nationally for new voting machines because they call them the clunky. They refer to the current machines as clunky. And then you have the mail-in vote and you have the absentee vote, which now people are realizing is not such a great idea, the absentee ballots.
Well, what do you mean by that? I mean,
it's
becoming more popular than ever in Florida.
They're popular, but is there really, if the party isn't really checking on what's happening to the ballots, then popular or not, the result's going to be not good.
You say you don't trust them?
I think the people, there's some real questions that they are not trustworthy.
Well, I haven't heard much about that.
All right. I'm just throwing out the, but you haven't heard about the voting machines?
Not at all. That's been kind of quiet on the state front.
Okay. So, all right. Well, we're coming to the end here. You'll report on Thursday what happens tomorrow night, and anything?
Sure.
No bombshells, nothing like that.
I mean, you mean the debate?
Yeah.
Well, we'll all see. We'll all be watching, right? I mean. It's a commercial for the Democratic Party. You got to look at it from that perspective. That's why, again, going back to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, which I think, you know, people have been so critical of her is, you know, who doesn't want to debate? Well, probably the front runner doesn't. And actually, Hillary Clinton is pretty, you know, not a great debater, but I think a pretty substantial debater. I will say this about Hillary Clinton, by the way. I've been, you know, following the campaign. She's been very, full of substance on this campaign. You know, a lot of premises, a lot of proposals. Now, you could argue that Bernie Sanders is pushing her more to the left on some things. And that may make it harder for her when she runs the general election. Then again, I have no idea who she'll be running against in the general election. That's, you know, it's
that seems to be the real question. I mean, Hillary, everything I've seen her do, she's not afraid to say what's on her mind, and with some depth and, as you said, substance.
Yeah.
But Schultz now, once this is over with, then the push for her to do more debates is going to get pretty intense. That's what I can see happening. And this whole thing, if somebody does something tantalizingly interesting, or Hillary or herself, and the women coming out and speaking for her, this whole business of women need to be represented in the government. And then the conversation about Carly Fiorina will come up somehow, I'm sure, because Carly makes up stories all the way and does a good job of it. And is Ben Carson really what he says he is, anti-Muslim, these kinds of things? And is that issue going to come up on the debates for the Democrats?
I hope it doesn't, actually. I mean, because the Republicans, I think the Democrats need to talk about the issues and not talk about these other person. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, you didn't hear them talking. You would hear criticism of Obama and maybe of Martin, of Hillary Clinton in those debates. But pretty much they're talking, they're asked about questions about themselves and against each other, right? Then again, the Republican thing, they've got 15 people going off on each other. So, no, I think that you might, it might be good for, you know, Dems to throw out an anti-Donald Trump or Ben Carson line, but I think that's a wasted move because, or, you know, it used to be Jeb Bush, right? Because that's when they thought Jeb Bush would be the nominee. Now they don't, now that they're worried about Jeb Bush, I don't know who they're worried about. I just think it's so early in the general election yet to start taking shots at Republicans. I think the Democrats, I think Martin O'Malley, again, Martin O'Malley has got to talk and maybe be critical about Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. And Hillary may try to make some comments about Bernie Sanders to bring him down a peg. They're really going to be, this is a Democratic primary, Democrat versus Democrat. And then again, the wild cards are Webb and Lincoln Chafee. I mean, you know, hello, we're actually over here right now.
What if one of the candidates says, you know, well, we need a new Speaker of the House, make it Donald Trump. It's been brought up just recently. But also let's let him come in and be part of our debate. Let him be the moderator for the next Democratic debate. And debate whether Debbie Wasserman Schultz remains as the head of the Democratic Party in Florida. I mean, something bizarre like that to get attention for the candidate.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I know you don't know. I'm just saying that it's the what if kind of thing, you know.
Well, I guess we could throw a lot of what ifs out there.
I love to play what ifs, you know. So, but anyway,
that's a what if, all right.
Well, there has been serious mention, or joking mention at least, of Trump becoming the new speaker because they can't seem to make up their mind. Because he's a solver, don't you know?
Well, I haven't heard. I've heard Newt Gingrich coming out of retirement.
That was the other one. Yeah, that's the other one. You're right. Gingrich. They threw Gingrich out and shouldn't have. And there would have been a whole different outcome in the previous election when he was around. But
I mean, because he's so unpopular, okay, Newt Gingrich. He was when he left the House 16 years ago. He's still unpopular.
He and Grover Norquist did the thing about putting it shrinking the government and drowning it in a
bathtub.
In a bathtub, yeah. Maybe not even a bathtub. Maybe make it small enough. But my favorite quote that causes an interesting reaction, it did on Friday, was, what did Ronald Reagan mean when he said government's the problem, not the solution?
What did he mean by that?
Yeah, what do you think he meant by that?
I think it was pretty self-evident. No?
Well, I want your direct opinion here now.
He was tapping into what has been a trademark, certainly the Republican Party in my lifetime, that he really solidified, which is to reduce the size of government since World War II, since the welfare Lyndon B. Johnson administration, the concerns that the government has grown too fast or too much. What you're seeing that right now, Augie. Look at these Republicans. Half these Tea Party guys, they don't want to do anything in government. I don't even know why they get elected, because all they want to do is shut things down and not fund things, basically, not spend any money.
Well, my view on what he really meant is, and it's self-defeating on the face of it, because if you don't believe in government, why do you run?
Right, I agree.
And that's kind of what that does. And some people on our panel on Friday said, well, it's always been that way. And I don't think that's true. I think it's gotten that way.
Well, Reagan was transformative, right? I mean, right. He really was. He encapsulated in brief, sentences or paragraphs, you know, keeping it very simple what the Republican Party now is about. Now, it shouldn't be about, you can still govern while trying to reduce the size of government, but you need to govern. You know, David Jolly talks about that often, the Pinellas County congressman, because he does take a stance against these wild radicals in the Tea Party who seem like they don't want to govern, you know. I think trying to shut down the government is not governing at all.
Yeah, right? Mitch, what Augie's referring to is, I believe that Reagan was right. I know that Reagan was talking about the size of government.
Right.
But I think government's a problem today because government doesn't work. They're too busy fighting each other. So in a sense, I'm taking Reagan's position, but not for the same reason. And that's what Augie's referring to. And Augie's right. I'm right. And probably
All I'm saying is, I think when you make that statement, you're basically undermining the whole purpose of government. You may not think you are, but you throw it out there, and so then people say, what's the point?
But the current purpose of our government is to fight each other. It's politics, it's power, it's not for the people, it's for their own personal power.
See, now we're into the debate again, but that's called the habit. As to the purpose is to govern of the people, by the people, for the people, I thought, and that's what I was arguing for, but the old principle of that.
And Augie, we agree there, but unfortunately right now the Tea Party and the radicals
but
we
Mitch
have there.
But Mitch is the guest here, so we got to get his view here now.
Hey,
well,
Mitch
by
has the way, a chance to finish up. I talked to Peter on the email. He wants you to email him, Augie, and get Peter on the show.
All right.
Peter was good. He was a good guest. Mitch, you have about 45 seconds to finish up. Any important salient points you have about Florida politics to leave our audience with?
All right.
Well, I don't know if I can do that, but I'll just say that thank you so much for having me on the program this morning. It's been a great pleasure. People can read me at floridapolitics.com or stpetersblog.com or listen to me on WMNF every Thursday between 12 and 1 p.m., 88.5 FM in Tampa.
And we'll call in there, too.
All right.
Thank you so much, Mitch. And
thank you, Augie.
We'll be talking again, and maybe after the debates.
Great. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, there we have it, and we're at the end of the show, and we're going to have, I think, on Wednesday, we're going to have Jim Delgado, one of the co-sponsors of the show.
Oh, cool. Jim's a great guy.
We're going to talk about incarceration. We're going to let Jim, if he may even show up in the studio, I'm not sure. I've got to double check.
That would be absolutely awesome. Okay, well, thank you very much for listening to The Morning Edge.
You're listening to 1490 AM, WWPR, Bradenton, Sarasota, Tampa Bay.